Hello, everyone. This is Anthony Sparkplug Thomas, the publisher of Atlanta's People You Need to Know Business Guide. And today, we have a special edition of our Atlanta's National Treasures edition, and we're going to be speaking to a legendary Atlanta attorney. Her name is Attorney Louise Thornton Hornsby, and we're going to be talking about many things about her life and experiences. It's going to be full of wisdom. I've known Attorney Hornsby for more than 20 years now, and every time I call her up, she's kind enough to share her lifelong wisdom with me, and I wanted to get some of her wisdom on the radio so people can listen to it for future generations. Thanks again for being with us today. I know you're extremely busy, and I appreciate you agreeing to do the interview this morning. Tell us, where were you born and in what year?
I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, Grady Hospital. I'm a Grady baby, 1937, May 2nd.
May 2nd, 1937. That was right close to the end of the Depression. Okay, and how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have one sister, Marcelia Thornton Rucker, and she's a Maddox now. And I've got a brother, Marcellus Thornton, Jr. He's a junior.
Okay. Do they live in Atlanta?
Yes, they do.
Now, what did your mother and your father do for a living, and what were their names?
Well, my father was one of the first black embalmers and one who owned a funeral business. His name was Marcellus Thornton, Sr. My mother's name was Mattie Taylor Thornton. She was a housewife at first until my mother and father divorced.
Now, your father, speaking of being an embalmer, he prepared Martin Luther King's body for his funeral.
He embalmed him, and not only did he embalm him, but he also officiated at his funeral.
What else do you remember about that time?
I remember that when Dr. King got killed, assassinated, I say, my dad called me, and he was very, very upset. And he also told me, that he embalmed him. And he said that one of the things that he thought, he said he didn't think, when they were talking about the man in the book depository, he said, I don't think that he was the one who killed him. He had an entrance wound from, he was leaning over the hotel patio, it was an entrance wound up under his chin that came out the back of his head, and said it looks like it was somebody down in the yard, in the courtyard, where he was pointing. You know, I mean, he was there, talking to the, I don't know whether talking to the people out there, and said that, you know, that's where the entrance wound looked like that. It didn't look like it came from the thing of the book depository, that they, like they say. I remember that I was kind of real upset, and so I said, well, let me go ask somebody. And at that time, I think Elgin Bell was the police or the detective or something. He was in high office, and I called him, and he said he talked to someone. He said I could talk to him if I wanted to, and I said no. He said that was not true. They had the right man, so I just, you know, left it alone.
Now, a little bit more about you. How old were you when you got married?
Oh, I think I was maybe about 18, 17, 18 when I first got married. I've had four marriages, Sparkplug.
So you were 17 or 18 the first time. Wow. Okay.
Right.
So what was your first husband's name? What was his name, and how old was he when you got married?
I don't remember how old he was, but he was older than I was. I was about 1920, maybe in my early 20s when I got married.
Okay. And what did he do for a living?
He worked for the Coca-Cola company, and he was a driver.
And you think he was in his 20s?
Yeah, I think he was probably in his 20s.
So how many kids did you have?
Two.
You had two. And what are their names?
Their names was Jennifer Burley and Carla Arlene Burley.
Okay. So how did you become interested in law?
When I got divorced, I filed for a divorce. And when I filed for a divorce, there was a woman, a black woman in the courtroom who was I think it was his lawyer. And I waited until the divorce was over, and I had never seen a black woman lawyer. And her name was R. Prudence Herndon. And I said, Ms. Herndon, I said, you know, I've got my divorce now, but I'd like to ask you, how did you get to be a lawyer? And she told me, she said, well, she said, I read law under Colonel Walden, who used to be a colonel, but he was a lawyer. And he was Dr. King's lawyer also. And he was
Hold on 1 second. Let me get you to speak up. You're saying some important stuff. Speak up just a little bit more for me, okay?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Ms. Herndon, am I loud enough?
You're good, right there.
Her name was Ara Prudence Herndon. And Ms. Herndon was the first black lawyer that I knew, woman. I asked her, how did she get to be a lawyer? And she said that she got to be a lawyer because she read law under A.T. Walden. His name was A.T. Walden. And he was a lawyer, black lawyer. And he took her under his wings, and she read law for 2 years, and then she was eligible to take the bar exam. And during that time, if you could find a lawyer who would tell the bar or either certify that you had read law under them for 2 years, then you were able to take the bar exam in Georgia.
Wow.
And didn't have to go to college, let's say it like that. But I did go 2 years at college. A college at Spelman College. I attended Spelman for 2 years.
Okay. And as a woman, what were some of the challenges that you faced, you know, in your pursuit of becoming an attorney?
Well, it was hard to get a job once I passed the bar, okay? Everybody told me, I went to Legal Aid, and they said they were tired of hiring old men and women. They were not going to hire anymore. So I said, well, I'm not just going to sit here with this law, you know, passing the bar. I'm going to hang out my shingles. So I went back to Ms. Herndon. And I later called her judge because she later became a judge. I went back to Ms. Herndon and said, Ms. Herndon, I want to know how to, you know, I passed the bar and I need to set up me an office. And they gave me an office downstairs from them. They were in the Butler Street Y building. And they granted me an office downstairs. On the first floor, I mean, just you could walk in. It's a walk-in thing. And I had an office. I set up my office there, and I started practicing law. And when I didn't, you know, had a case and didn't know what to do with it, I'd run upstairs and ask Ms. Herndon, what do I do? And she'd tell me, you know. And I'd go and watch her, you know, too. So I went to John Marshall because John Marshall, before I passed the bar, let me say this. This is a little... Before I passed the bar, I went to John Marshall Law School because they had just opened their doors to black people at that time, and they was giving a bar review course. Prior to that time, a black lawyer whose name was Mr. Matthews opened a little law school that he taught, and he taught law, and he had other lawyers, black lawyers, to come in and teach us. He taught law. And that was on Auburn Avenue. I went to that school, too. I graduated. He had a little graduation, and I graduated, but I had taken the bar that time but did not pass it. And so then when I went to John Marshall, I took a bar review course because they had just opened their doors and integrated the school. And I was one of the first students in there who took the bar review course, and I passed after I took John Marshall's bar review course. I passed the bar. So,
Let's back up a little bit. You first saw that African-American woman who was an attorney, and you asked her about how you could become an attorney, and she told you if you could, you know, work under an attorney for 2 years, you know, and then take the bar, you could become an attorney. Who was that attorney that you worked under for 2 years?
Wesley Matthews opened a little law school. He just opened a law school. He just had an idea to open a law school. And he taught lawyers. And that's where I first started learning law with Wesley Matthews, who had an office. He was an attorney who had a office on Auburn Avenue.
You took what would be considered, by today's standard, a non-traditional route to becoming an attorney, right?
Yes.
So when did that end?
It ended after a while. I think what happened is a lot of black lawyers found out about did that. And I don't know, they were not, I guess what happened is when integration came, I found out just before the integration, before it came. If I'm answering your question, I'm not sure I am.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this question.
So you might ask it, and I'll answer it again. Okay.
You told me the other day when John Marshall Law School opened up their school to blacks, it was around 1965. Right?
It was around 1965.
And so, do you know?
It was 1965.
So, do you know about between 1965 and 1970 when they started telling the people that you had to go to law school, at Georgia State or Morehouse or Spelman or wherever?
Well, I don't know, but what happens now, what happened, they did have a period where you could still do it, and then after a while they abolished that. And
that's
I don't
right.
remember the date when they abolished it and said that now you got to, they said now you got to go to law school.
Well, that was a beautiful thing because Abraham Lincoln did that same thing that you did. He didn't go to law school, and he became an attorney.
It's about four states in the United States that still allows it, but Georgia
is
one of those who opt out of it, I think.
I know one is California. I think one
California.
Is Vermont, but that's still incredible when you think about it today.
It is.
Yeah. Now, did you ever have a big court case that had a major impact on your life?
Yes. The impact case that I had was one I'm not going to say his whole name, but that was the one. It was really a real sensitive case and a bad case as far as I could see, and I handled it. It was the first time that I ever got a case where my client got the death penalty. In fact, he got two penalties, and it was just very sensitive. And one of the things that was so sensitive is he was charged with rape. He was black, and he was charged with rape of a white girl, young girl. And when she got on the stand, I was ready to cross-examine her, and I was almost tearful when I saw how young she was knew what she had gone through. And I had to stop, and I had to ask for the recess, and I had to cry, go cry somewhere and cry, and then come back and cross-examine her. So I don't know, but he's probably out of jail now. It was all commuted when they stopped the death penalty in Georgia. It was commuted to a life sentence, and he's probably served his life sentence now. Because it wasn't one of the closed life sentences. It was just a regular life sentence, which was a certain amount of years at that time.
So how did that affect your life moving forward after that trial?
Well, I decided that, what I would do is I would do the best for my clients. And not only would I do the best, but I'd try my best. And if it was a case that, I was very sensitive about, that I probably would not take that again. But what happened is the judge, I was in another courtroom, and I had visited, I had a case in another county, let's say it like this. I had a case in another county. And I went to this county, and when I got there, I saw that they were qualifying the person for the death penalty. And I said, oh, my goodness. And the man, the lawyer that he had, I didn't think he was doing good. And so I asked to speak to the judge, and I said, Judge, I don't think he's getting proper representation. I think he needs some help, you know, the lawyer. And the judge says, okay, so you're so interested in it, then I'm going to appoint you. And I went like, what? You know, I don't know anything. I told him, I don't know anything about, you know, I've never tried a death penalty case. He said, well, he ain't either, so, you know, you and her, him going to try this case. And I tried to end up trying the case, you know. So I got a mistrial that time. So they never tried him again in that county. They tried him in another county. It was a really interesting case, so.
Let me back up a little bit just for historical purposes. The gentleman that had the school for blacks on Auburn Avenue, where was it located on Auburn Avenue? Is it close to the Peacock? I mean, what was it close to?
It was close to the Atlanta Life building, a little down.
Okay.
That was close to the, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. All right, the late, great Alonzo Herndon, founder.
I'm trying to think. I think it was something like 350, 250 Auburn Avenue or something, but it's kind of close.
I was just curious, and for historical reasons, or historical purposes, that's the Royal Peacock I was referring to.
Yeah,
okay.
I know about the Royal Peacock.
Oh, I know you know. I was just telling our listeners. So, you know, I've often said to you over the years that your voice reminds me of Maya Angelou. So what did you like about the late, great Maya Angelou?
Oh, I loved her poems. I used to read them all the time, and I loved her poems. And not only you, but a lot of people. Even sometimes my jurors, after I get through trying a case, the jurors tell me that I reminded them of Maya Angelou.
Isn't that something? Did you have a favorite Maya Angelou poem?
Still I Rise.
Still I Rise. All right. Now, speaking of some history, did you ever get a chance to meet Atlanta's first black mayor, Maynard Jackson?
Yes, I went to school with Maynard. In fact, I knew Maynard very well.
And what school was that?
David T. Howard High School.
David T. Howard. Okay. Let me back up a little bit to Spelman. What was your Spelman experience like?
Well, my Spelman experience was good, but when I left Spelman, and because I had a scholarship when I first got in Spelman, but I think I'm not sure whether I lost my scholarship or not. But anyway, I think I got married while I was at Spelman, and I believe that I got pregnant. I'm not sure, but I think that's what happened, and that's why I stopped Spelman. And so I had my baby, my first child. Then I then got interested in law. And, you know, when I got interested in law, I went to law school while I was still out, Spelman. And then I passed the bar. And then I tried to go back to Spelman. And the Dr. Eagleson would not. He was my, the primary, he was, you know, head of the student. He wouldn't let me come back. He said the lawyers would know you didn't have to go to law school to be a lawyer. So, I mean, he wouldn't let me back in. So I never graduated from Spelman. But I did, was able to walk under the, to be with the class and walk under the arches. And that was, to me, you know, enough.
All right. So how long did you practice law, and when did you retire, if you have retired?
Oh, I passed the bar. Let's see. I passed the bar in, I think, 1965, I believe. You know, I passed the bar. I worked as a public defender for Fulton County Public Defender. I was the first African-American public defender in Fulton County. And I also served as a part-time judge in the city of Atlanta traffic court. And I was later appointed by Atlanta Mayor Andrew Young as the Solicitor General for the City Court of Atlanta. That was traffic court. And I worked there until about 1996. And then I opened my my office at Greenbrier. That was a private office. And then in 2013, I changed it to law practice, the Hornsby Law Firm, LLC, where I practice with my daughters, my two daughters. I have two daughters who are attorneys, Christy Hornsby Battle and Avis Hornsby Culpepper. So I've been practicing. And I was in the Greenbrier area first, and then we set up a law office at 863 Cascade Avenue, Atlanta. And my daughters still practice there. And I'm with them, but I have not, I was sick for about 2 years, and I haven't been really practicing long, but as far as going to court, I do go with them sometimes, but, you know, and I take in cases for them, you know, we work there sometimes. I kind of retired, but not completely. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Let me ask you this question. I just thought about this. Did you ever get a chance to meet the legendary attorney Leroy Johnson?
Yes. Yes, I knew Senator Johnson very well, very well.
What do you remember about him?
I remember he was a statesman. He was very polite. He was a good lawyer, you know. He was well respected in the courtroom.
He represented Martin Luther King a few times, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Attorney A.T. Walden, the one I was telling you about, he was one of his main attorneys too.
Okay.
And I think that he probably after then, that's when Senator took over, after Attorney Walden died.
Okay. Now, did you ever get a chance to meet Martin Luther King?
I might have met him, but I don't remember. But I met his daddy. His daddy, most of the time, he came to traffic court a lot. His daddy, we used to call him Daddy King.
But that's right.
My father was a member of Daddy King's church.
Okay. All right. So tell us, what would you like your legacy to be?
Well, you know, I love law, and I'd like. I've been awarded a lot of things. A lot of things. I got John Marshall gave me a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2022.
Congratulations!
And I've had the R.P. Hernitz Award. From Black National Black Lawyers, and I've got John Marshall gave me a Lifetime Achievement Award, and also the City of Atlanta gave me a proclamation. I mean, I've had a lot of awards that I just thank God for that, and for being able to practice law with my children. Enjoy law. I love law.
What would you like your legacy to be for your family?
Well, just say she was a good mom.
Okay.
And that, you know, she loved people. I do. And, you know, I tried to do the best that I could.
All right. And finally, what advice, if you have some, do you have for today's woman who might be listening to this interview and might even want to become an attorney one day?
Well, if you did, you would always have an interesting job. If you love law, it kind of grows on you. You just love it. It's something that you love doing. I've got a grandson who's a lawyer. So it's just good to know that you can help people at times when they need help, and especially during, you know, the times that I did, because most of the time, you know, black people were, you know, didn't get real good help a lot of times with legal. And I would always try a case. I learned the first job I had was with the public defender's office, and we had a wonderful leader. His name was Jess Watson, and Jess told us this. He said, "Your first duty is to your God. Your second is to your client, and the third is to this office." And I mean in that order. And I'm going to be behind you. And he made us fearless, you know, as public defenders. I was taught to be fearless in court, you know.
So you want to encourage the women to be fearless?
To be fearless in whatever occupation that you want to be in. And if God designed you to, God created us all for a purpose. You got to recognize your purpose and get in your purpose and walk in your purpose. And then, you know, you shall have success.
Now, you mentioned a few times about your love for the law. What is it about the law that you love so much?
Well, I always love history. I noticed that. History books would interest me more than anything. And then a lot of times, you know, you wanted people to have good representation. You see that they didn't, and then you wanted them to have good representation. You know, when the state makes a case, they got to prove it. And that's what the law says, and I like to make the state prove that case. And that's why I usually don't ask people, are you guilty or not guilty? I say, you know, I mean, that's up to you. You tell me. You know that. That's between you and your God. But tell me what happened. And usually when I can determine the facts, I can determine and tell them and advise them as to what I think about their case. So, you know, I try not to judge people, and I do my best not to.
Hmm.
I know
okay.
that would not be my job as an attorney to me.
Okay. Now, you say you really love history. What are some aspects of history that really stand out in your mind that you'll like to share with our listeners today?
When you follow history, then you almost know what is the future, because things are repeated. A lot of things are repeated in history, and you can see it, you know, you can see it. You see it, and not only, you know, you can know how to prevent it sometimes.
What era of history would you like to go back and live for maybe a year or two?
None. None. I didn't like this COVID. This COVID era. You know, I thought that's the worst thing that I've been through. Really, you know, the not being able to freely associate with people. To wear masks and to, you know, just be leery of things and people and going places and stuff. You know, freedom. You know, that's the worst thing that I think that one of the worst things that I've been through.
Well, Attorney Hornsby, before we bring this interview to a close, I was just thinking about it. You were in my publication a couple of times. People You Need to Know. You were in it when it was in black and white, and you were in it when it was in color. What did you like about being in our publication?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. I got a lot of compliments. I got a lot of business, too. You know, I was in private practice at the time that I was in it, and I got a lot of business, and I enjoyed it, and it was just good. It was, you kind of treated us like royalty, and it was wonderful, sparkling.
Beautiful. Well, Attorney Hornsby, did you have any final words you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Final word that I have is I think all should know Christ, okay, and love Him and obey Him. And I wrote a book, a little book, and I said Jesus said it. I wanted to know what Jesus said, and so I kind of copied it. It's from the Bible and wrote it and made it kind of like a everyday, you know, what do you call those diaries? You know, every day you
mm-hmm.
read something, and I just enjoy reading it myself, you know, and I feel like that, you know, each morning I wake up and I I thank God for keeping me, and I thank God for the things that he did that day, and pray that we have a successful day that day, and try to live one day at a time, be good to people, and enjoy people.
Attorney Hornsby, I want to say thank you for your time and your patience, but most of all, your hospitality.
Well, thank you so much for this interview, and I hope and I pray that I have encouraged somebody to do whatever they need to do and what they were called to do. God bless.
I'm sure you have. You take care, okay? Thank you.
All right. Goodbye.
All right. Bye-bye.